When I was just a tyke, cowboy actors were marketed as role models for little backyard cowpokes like me. And we could send off to get a certificate, making us pals of the saddle or some such with Roy Rogers, Hopalong Cassidy, or others. Cute for a 4-year-old, less so for 57-year-old Jeff Spaceboy Bezos. Yet, the gabillionaire profiteer, labor exploiter, and tax scofflaw who heads the Amazon online retail syndicate was all dressed up in July, play-acting as a heroic conqueror of space. Little Jeff took an ego trip on his very own rocket ship, publicizing it as some combination of Wright Brothers innovation and Apollo moon landing. But the whole thing took only 11 minutes, barely made it to space, achieved no scientific purpose, and did zero to enhance American prestige in the world. As for personal genius or heroics, Bezos didn't invent or build the spacecraft, didn't have any role in flying it, and he faced no cosmic unknowns. He didn't even have to wear a spacesuit. All he really did was to buy the spacecraft. But he did get to dress up in a sort of space-style jogging outfit, with his name and his corporate logo emblazoned on it. Then, like a little boy getting a cereal box certificate proclaiming him a cowboy, when the diminutive mega-billionaire floated back to terra firma, he held a fake ceremony at which some former NASA official pinned a set of phony astronaut wings on him. More pathetically, his corporate lobbyists are said to be appealing to Washington officials to award official astronaut wings for what amounted to a rich man's carnival ride. This is Jim Hightower saying, so there you have the new pantheon of America's flight heroes, the Wright brothers, Amelia Earhart, John Glenn, and Jeff Spaceboy Bezos. Did I mention pathetic? The Hightower Radio Lowdown is brought to you by the Lowdown Happy Hour, live streamed from the Chat and Chew Cafe. Details at HightowerLowdown.org.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I got an email just about an hour before showtime from my kid's school district. And hey, congratulations, the county I live in, now one of the identified super spreader counties. Evidently, we've had a substantial spread of COVID-19 in this county, and they're worried about school's going to begin in just, well, what, 2.5 weeks? Something like that. And they're saying, hey, this is how we're going to try and keep your kids safe. Yes, we're going to mandate that kids wear their masks. And the part of the email that caught my attention the most, they said, yep, we're going to mandate the social distancing, the washing the hands, the masks, all of that. What the CDC says is things we should be doing. They write, we understand that this decision will not be the preference of all of our families. Regardless of personal beliefs on masks, it is our sincere desire to put reasonable mitigation strategies in place so that all students may attend in-person classes and experience engaging and interactive lessons. For those of you who don't want to wear a mask, who don't want to follow the rules, there's always the virtual academy that you can go to. You can go homeschool. Now, what's interesting is the people who are screaming the loudest about having to wear masks, they're the ones who want to get away from the virtual stuff. Going to be interesting to see how this school year kicks off. But here to share some thoughts on, you know, what do we do in this moment of COVID? What do we do as school begins to open up? That's why I've asked Arthur Steinberg to come talk with us. Arthur's the president of the AFT Pennsylvania, American Federation of Teachers. Arthur, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you for having me, Rick. And before we start, I just want to let the audience know, and I'm sure everybody joins me in mourning the loss today of Rich Trumka, the president of the national president of the AFL-CIO, a true champion of working class people and the middle class, and was most proud of his Pennsylvania roots. He was the son of a Pennsylvania coal miner and never forgot where he came from and always advocated for working people and the middle class.
Yeah, and again, this has been the topic of our almost our entire show so far, because while I wanted to talk about the 40th year since the firing of the Patco workers, the unfortunate passing of Rich Trumka has pretty much dominated the entire show thus far. So I guess I got to ask you, because, you know, we talked with, you know, presidents of the AFL across the country and their memories. Do you have a particular memory of Rich?
Just him interceding on the behalf of local candidates that had working class values when local CELCs and labor councils, when there was some difficulties being back and forth, but not a specific instance of dealing with him. Fortunately, we have not had to call on him to intervene on our behalf, but just being in his presence a few times and hearing him speak so passionately about what the needs of working folks and the middle class, and how he firmly believed that the strength of the country would be having a strong middle class.
No, he's going to be missed, and the hope is that, and my faith and my hope is with Liz Shuler that she'll pick up and move forward as we fight to get the PRO Act passed and move the labor movement forward to help working families get better wages, hours, conditions, and better opportunities. And for me, a lot of that starts in the classroom. And, you know, I go back to where...
Listen, before you get it, I think, you know, as we all know, he is leaving large shoes to fill. And what a tremendous legacy that would be for us to get together and pass the PRO Act.
No, it's something we desperately need, but especially in this moment. And I'm with you. And you know, as Rick Bloomingdale a moment ago said, you know, Liz Shuler called on Chuck Schumer to change the name of the act to the Richard Trumka Act. You know, Protecting Rights to Organize Act, which I think would be a class move. So, you know, to education, because a lot of folks are concerned about, you know, we're opening schools in the next couple of weeks. I'm sure you know this as well as anyone. And there's so many questions, especially as we're now appearing to be in another spike era. I'm curious what you guys are advocating for, what you guys are working on.
Okay, well, first of all, Rick, I'd like to be very clear that we have advocated since last spring for every child to be able to return to full-time learning 5 days a week in person. And we've been steadfast in that belief, and everything that we have done is pointed towards making that happen now so that the children and staff members can be safe in schools.
Okay, so just so I get this right, because I got a ton of right-wing crazy people sending me Facebook messages that you guys are the evil ones who never want to return, who always want to do this, who are ruining our children's education because you're afraid of the virus.
So it's a false narrative. We have said since last April and March, the AFT, which we are, you know, a member of, came out and said, what we need to do is make it safe for kids to return to school, because nothing replaces the face-to-face interaction between educators and their students. And that's what they desperately want to do. They did not enjoy working at home. It was very, very difficult to teach kids remotely and in class at the same time when you had hybrid learning. And they suffered. And make no mistake about it, school buildings were closed, but schools were not. And they suffered an incredible amount of stress and burnout at the end of the year. So for all those folks spreading those lies, rest well assured, we have said time and time again that we want everybody to be able to return to in-person learning full-time and do it safely. And we're working towards that goal this summer.
Yeah. No, and every teacher I've talked to has said the exact same thing. We want to get back into the classroom. We want to do what we were trained to do. We want to do what is our passion. But we want to do it in a way that not going to kill our students. And if you see some of the videos coming out that parents are posting, you know, in places like Florida, you know, of 9-year-olds hooked up to ventilators, no sane, rational person wants a child to be exposed to that kind of illness.
Oh, that's right. That makes no sense. All I can say is that I'm glad I don't live in Florida or Arkansas. I mean, it's tragic what the political leadership down there is doing, really sacrificing kids and educators for a political agenda.
Now, it's your view that going back to school, as long as they're doing the masks, the social distancing, that's gonna happen this fall?
Yes, it is. And let me say one thing that I think is critically important, and our union has been at the front of advocating for this, is the vaccine. The vaccine just protects everyone. There's a small number of breakthrough cases, right? Again, the right wing is exaggerating the number of that. However, even in a small number, when it's breakthrough, they don't get sick. They don't end up in the hospital. And more importantly, they do not die. And 90% of our members are vaccinated. And I think the key is to educate and get the rest of them to have that vaccine so that they can go to school safely. And then do the masking, make sure that the ventilation systems are still enhanced, do the hand washing and hand sanitizing, because as we know, the kids under 12 can't get vaccinated yet. And one of the frightening things about this Delta variant is that it now infects kids, and kids are getting sick with it. You just mentioned the 9-year-old and the ventilator in Florida. If that doesn't break someone's heart, then they don't have a heart.
There is that. Now, you brought up the vaccines. Is this a situation where the union would be all right with mandating that teachers have to get the vaccine?
Yeah. Listen, I think we may get there at some point because of people's resistance. And again, your friends on the right wing, the disinformation they have put out there has really made it very, very difficult to convince some of the people that are reluctant. But I firmly believe, as does the AFT and AFT Pennsylvania, that education is the key, and getting people to buy in will be much more beneficial than coercion in getting them to do it. We've been sponsoring vaccine fairs, awareness situations, and encouraging people to get up, and get the shot in the arm.
No, because I'll tell you, and I know my soul is going to take a hit for this. Karma may come back and bite me in the behind, but I'm in this place where, if you didn't get the vaccine, you had the opportunity to do it, you get sick and you die, I have no sympathy.
I've heard a lot of people express that a very similar sentiment to you.
And, at this moment, I don't want those people around my children. At some point.
I think one of the misnomers they put out there is, I have the personal freedom to not take a vaccine. Well, however, you don't have the personal freedom to create a public health crisis and make me or my family sick. So, I think that's a false assertion. And then one again that we really have to fight and combat so that people will realize the significance and safety of getting the vaccine. And the sad thing about it is we have a surplus of it here, and the rest of the world is struggling for it.
Yeah, isn't that amazing?
We have it on every corner.
Isn't that amazing that we've got an abundance of what people in other countries are literally dying for, and we're not going to take advantage of it because somebody wrote something on Facebook or you saw something, in some meme that someone tweeted to you. It's insane to me.
Listen, Lindsey Graham himself put it the best. I never thought I'd hear myself agreeing with Lindsey, right? He got it, and he got COVID, and he got right up on the podium and said, "I'm so glad I got vaccinated because I'm sure I would have been much, much sicker if I didn't." If that doesn't convince these people, I don't know what will.
Yeah, I look at the talking heads over on some of these right-wing platforms who are, talking about don't get vaccinated and it's all a hoax. I'll bet you every one of them are vaccinated. And like you, I recently agreed with Alan Dershowitz when he was on the Laura Ingraham show, and he said, look, just what you said, you have the right to do what you want, but you don't have the right to get me sick. And this goes back to, something I've always said about, Justice Hugo Black said, you have the right to flail your fists around until they touch the tip of my nose. So in the same vein, you have the right to not vaccinate yourself until it makes me sick. And that's where we have a problem. And this is where, again, I don't want people who are unvaccinated around my kids.
No, you don't want to get vaccinated. Stay in your house and leave me alone.
I'm right there with you. Now let's move back to the classroom, because this is going to be a major adjustment going back to school. I know for my kids, I've got a kid going in the 7th grade, one going in the 10th grade. It's going to be an adjustment from, what was the last year and a quarter or so of education. Do you expect any spasms? What kind of a situation do you expect to return to?
spasms, I'm not sure exactly what you mean. I think it's critically important that there be enforcement of the masking policies. The research has shown that they are very, very effective when you combine that with having adequate ventilation in classrooms, that really, really does reduce the spread. And we have found in a lot of districts that the problem is the administration is not enforcing the masking requirements, whether it's because of community pressure or they just don't want to do it and put up with the aggravation from it.
Right.
That is then where these outbreaks occur. By wearing the masks and complying with everything else, then we will really, really minimize the amount of schools that have to be shut down. The worst thing that will happen is for school to start and then classrooms starting, you know, to have to be quarantined. And I will tell you that my experience at the end of the year last year was kids, contrary to what everybody said at the beginning, as long as they know it's expected of them, the kids were very, very compliant with wearing the mask, even the young ones.
Yeah, I, according to my kids, the same thing. But by the word spasm, I meant, you know, people returning back to each other, returning to classrooms, you know, what kind of, you know, kids have almost forgotten. I know adults have forgotten how to interact with each other. If you've seen some of the videos in restaurants and on airplanes, you know, I'm wondering how you expect, you know, us coming back to schools and that becoming again part of the center of the community. What are you expecting and preparing for in that vein?
I am fully confident that with the professionalism and dedication that our members and our educators have shown over the years, that they will adapt and make sure the transition is as smooth as they can. And that will then in turn pass a sense of comfort and relaxation onto their students, and that they'll do what they do best, which is teach children.
My hope for this year is that things go smoothly. Kids get back to class. They get caught up. And on that vein, because this is the last line of questioning I want to get to, I've got a lot of friends who are concerned that, you know, kids have lost. They've lost something over the last year plus. Do you have confidence that they catch up? Do you have confidence that, you know, at the end of the road, they're going to be okay?
Yes, I do. And one of the things that gives me great hope is President Biden's stimulus package for schools. They gave a tremendous amount of resources to school districts. It's now up to them to allocate them properly, take care of kids and staff's mental health, which will then put them in a position to start learning again. And contrary to what you've heard, some of the kids really made, a lot of kids made remarkable progress last year. It's surprising, again, a lot of the right-wing and anti-public education folks. So I'm fully confident we have a stable, smooth beginning of the school year, provide these services and extra help for kids, that they will really be well on the road to being where they belong, and this may actually accelerate their learning.
I hope you're right. I hope things get back to some bit of normal and maybe even a little better as we appreciate being in the classroom more, as we appreciate the environment, the learning environment, and we move forward and eventually get to put this whole pandemic behind us.
Listen, Rick, you know, before I go, I think you just said something very pertinent there. We have a chance and an opportunity now to build it back better to give kids, no matter where they live, no matter their zip code, an opportunity to thrive.
Let's hope that. And I know your members will do their best, professional, wonderful people. I wish them the best, and I hope you'll come back and share some tales of success as we move into this, and hopefully things go smoothly. I appreciate the time, Arthur.
I look forward to that, and thanks for having me.
Good stuff. Arthur Steinberg, he's the president of the American Federation of Teachers, Pennsylvania. If you got thoughts, questions, comments, you can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Quick break, right back. Stick around.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two.
On this day in labor history, the year was 1917. That was the day IWW leader Frank Little was buried in Butte, Montana. Little had been lynched on August 1st by police agents thought to be working for the despised Anaconda Copper Company. He had arrived in town to help organize 14,000 striking copper miners. Devastated by the deaths of 168 miners in the June fire at Granite Mountain and Spectacular Mines, mine workers formed the Metal Mine Workers Union and walked off the job. Frank Little had previously worked as a hard rock miner and organizer for the Western Federation of Miners. He also took part in the free speech campaigns on the West Coast. Little was involved in early drives to industrially organize oil workers and lumberjacks. He voiced his opposition to the First World War and sought to stop workers from enlisting. When Little arrived in Butte in July, he worked to build strike support, picket lines, and spread the strike to other trades across the city. Early on August 1st, six masked men broke into the boarding house where he was staying. He was beaten and taken from his room. His assailants tied him to the bumper of their car and dragged him through the granite streets of Butte to the Milwaukee Bridge, where he was hanged. An ominous note was pinned to his bullet-ridden body with the words that read, "Others take notice, first and last warning." It included the numbers 3, 7, and 77, as well as the initials of other union organizers in the area. As many as 10,000 marched in his funeral procession. Days after his lynching, martial law was declared. Labor radicals were rounded up and charged with espionage. The miners' strike and union were crushed.
Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in 2.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, California Governor Gavin Newsom. Last month, he said that they would require healthcare workers to either be vaccinated or submit to testing. What they're saying right now is they're going to require healthcare workers, all 2.2 million healthcare workers and the folks who take care of long-term ill folks. They're going to have to be fully vaccinated by September 30th. And this is one of those moments where you go, you know, I'm generally against mandates. But in the healthcare field, where you're supposed to be the ones taking care of people. And look, we see these stories of these healthcare workers going, well, we're just overwhelmed. In fact, I have a friend who privately has told me, look, I'm losing it. We are working, you know, way too hard. There are too many of these cases popping up. He's basically losing his mind. And angry as you can be, because we don't have to do this. We didn't have to go through this. This is because of a bunch of dumb people doing dumb stuff. And I guess, you know, as a friend of mine says, you know, play stupid games, win stupid prizes. Well, the stupid prizes are, you know, people ain't making it. And it's bad for my soul because, you know, I look at this and I have no sympathy for the Republican leader in Texas who, you know, is 40 some years old with small children who just died of COVID while he was mocking it on Facebook, while he was somebody in a position that could have influenced others to go, hey, this is a good idea. We should protect ourselves. It's not good for my soul to go, good, bye. Sadly, you reproduced before you left. And I think of all those people who barely got out of, you know, high school biology, now, you know, world-leading epidemiologists and world-leading virologists. They know it all because they saw it on Facebook. It's crazy. Just crazy. But good on California. Good on them for doing that. And you know the sad reality is, you know, they're there looking at their Facebook memes, sitting right there on the toilet seat, garbage in, garbage out. Just crazy. Now some interesting news coming out of Mexico. You may remember a couple of days ago I talked about Mexico deciding that they're going to stop using this or allowing the imports of any corn made with this glyphosate or glyphosate, the stuff that Roundup is made of, the insecticide that they use, that, you know, basically from what I'm told, is causing massive amounts of cancer and all kinds of horrible stuff. They're also talking about, you know, not allowing genetically modified corn into Mexico. I now see that the Mexican government evidently has sued a number of gun manufacturers here in the U.S., alleging that the gun laws in this country are way too lax, and that the flow of illegal guns into Mexico is the fault of, well, the U.S. government and these gun companies. And it's one of those things where you go, is this the moment that Mexico starts building the wall? And would Trump have been right that Mexico was going to build a wall and pay for it to keep out the genetically modified corn and the illegal guns out of their country? Now, that's not going to happen. They're going to sue, and it's probably going to get nowhere. But this is one of those moments where you go, you know, how do these international alliances, you know, how do they line up? Now, the suit itself names Smith & Wesson, Barrett Firearms Manufacturing, Beretta USA, Glock, and Colt Manufacturing Company. They're evidently seeking something like $10 billion in legal actions for deaths and all the stuff that goes on. Because, look, you know, you've got this huge drug trade. Now, this is where I expect the U.S. at some point to go, no, we're going to sue you over drugs. And we're going to end up in these court battles back and forth until someone goes, no, we're going to build a wall. It's crazy. And this is where the right wing will go, see, even they want a wall. But it comes back to our lax rules and the fact that corporate America dominates. You know, for me, these stories are less about, you know, the headlines and more about just how much power corporate America has over our lives in every single aspect. And just how much they get away with because of the power that we give them, because of the resources and the money that they have. You know, $10 billion, you think they could probably pay that and just go, here, a little hush money, hush up. Cost of doing business. And who knows, maybe this is the brilliant part. This is how screwed up our system has become. Maybe they get to write it off and lose money for the year, and we would give them more. We'd give them huge tax breaks and actually subsidize them. Maybe next year they'll be one of the companies that pays zero federal income tax and actually gets a tax break back from us. Just remarkable. Now, according to the Mexican government, U.S. gun manufacturers designed these weapons so that it will appeal to Mexican crime groups. Evidently, the Colt 38 super pistol is engraved with an image of one of the revolutionary heroes of the Mexican people, Emiliano Zapata. You know, there was a model of a handgun was used to assassinate a journalist. And look, you know, the gun manufacturers, they will do anything they have to do to sell their guns, to sell their weapons, to make their profits. It's not even about guns. This is the part that gets me, and this is what drives me insane. I'm driving in the car today, and I'm listening to NPR. And the story on NPR was, evidently there's misinformation everywhere in the U.S. The internet is full of misinformation, and that these misinformation sites are making billions of dollars. And there's evidently an organization out there, and I forget, the NewsGuard or something like that, that they cited as the company that, you know, watches these websites and rates, you know, like their clicks and rates their traffic so that advertisers run to them. And the person that they were interviewing was shocked that, you know, there's a lot of corporate money going to these misinformation sites. And, you know, I don't think corporations know that this is going on. you know, just like corporate America, you know, there's a way to not, you know, fund these adult sites or child porn sites or any of that stuff. You know, there's got to be a way for misinformation. And I'm going, what are you on? Corporate America doesn't care. When will you realize that corporate America cares about one thing? Profit. And the power that profit brings them. They don't care who they advertise to. If they could figure out a way to get on the dark web and pitch their product to the most perverted child porn ring leader, they would do that if they thought they could not get caught. It's about the profit. So saying that, well, I don't think they know. I think they do, and I think they don't care. Because at the end of the day, all they care about are the numbers. Who's clicking and how many eyes is it going to get? So how many people will buy my product? That's it. I'm so tired of this idea that there are these benevolent companies who, oh, they care. I'm so tired of people buying into this idiotic myth that corporate America has a conscience or a heart or morality. They have none of that. They care about profit. So please stop with the, oh, I don't think corporate America knows. They know, and they don't care. So in this environment where you've got, you know, the Mexican government going, hey, we're gonna sue because they're targeting this stuff at our criminals, you go, really? Are you surprised by that? Tobacco companies had ad campaigns to get children smoking cigarettes. Are you surprised by anything they do? We got bubblegum flavored the smoke stuff, the vape now. Bubblegum flavored. What adult chews bubblegum? Bubblegum flavors to get kids going, oh, look, bubblegum flavor. It's got to be fun. When will we stop? When does it end? When do we finally realize corporate America doesn't care about its workers, doesn't care about the environment, doesn't care about the country, doesn't care about democracy or voting or decency or humanity or morality or any of that. They care about profit. Period. Quick break. Right back.
Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
Fact is, America can't wait any longer. Our roads and bridges are crumbling beneath our feet.
Looks like Infrastructure Week is finally happening. County in Washington State passes America's first ever ban on new fossil fuel infrastructure. Plus, massive new wildfires force evacuations in Greece, Turkey, and Italy.
All of those stories and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
I am not worried. I live in California. The coronavirus in the air is killed by the smoke from the fires. So I...
See? Everything works out just fine. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, maybe... We're actually going to see an infrastructure bill passed? Really?
Maybe. But first, a wildfire's aftermath has led to the closure of a major U.S. interstate highway indefinitely. Interstate 70 through the Rocky Mountains near Glenwood Springs, Colorado, has been shut down after torrential rains caused a massive mudslide on a mountain slope that burned in last year's record wildfire season, trapping about 100 motorists in their cars overnight.
Oh, really?
Now, all were evacuated safely, but Colorado officials called the mudslide damage, quote, unlike anything we've ever seen before.
And I have driven many times on that Interstate 70 through Glenwood in Colorado. It is beautiful. It's shut down indefinitely?
Yes, it could take months to repair.
Wow.
And now requires hours-long detours, some through Wyoming.
Oh, man.
So that climate-related shutdown arrives just in time for Infrastructure Week, which appears to be actually happening for reals this time after becoming a running joke in the Trump administration. Senate Democrats released details of the nearly $1 trillion bipartisan infrastructure bill, which contains $550 billion in new spending over 5 years to repair the nation's crumbling roads, bridges, water, and wastewater infrastructure, including replacing all of the nation's lead service lines. Environment-related provisions include billions in funding for passenger rail and public transit, an electric vehicle charging network, all-electric school buses, cleanup of Superfund and brownfield sites, transmission lines and modernizing the electric grid, carbon capture technologies, advanced battery research, drought mitigation, and coal mine cleanup and reclamation.
This is a big deal, and it's the smaller of the two infrastructure packages they're talking about.
Yes, if this bipartisan bill attracts 10 Senate Republican votes to win passage, it would constitute the largest investment in America since the 1950s. However, Republican Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell on Monday indicated that Republicans plan to drag out the process.
Uh-oh.
Our full consideration of this bill must not be choked off by any artificial timetable that our Democratic colleagues may have penciled out for political purposes.
Well, too bad. Take as long as they want. Chuck Schumer is not letting them go home for their August recess until they pass this bill.
Now, remember, this is separate from the much larger $3.5 trillion Democrats-only budget reconciliation deal, which can be passed in the Senate with a simple majority vote. But conservative Democratic senators Joe Manchin of West Virginia and Kyrsten Sinema of Arizona both have been saying that they have issues with that $3.5 trillion price tag.
Oh, they have issues, all right.
In other news, the climate hits just keep on coming. Last week, Greenland's ice sheet saw a surge in melting during another Arctic heat wave in a single day, releasing enough meltwater to cover the entire state of Florida in 2 inches of water.
Wow.
Six regions around the world are now grappling with massive wildfires driven by extreme heat and drought intensified by man-made climate change. The U.S. West, Ontario, Canada, Russian Siberia, and now a ring of fire around the Mediterranean as more than 800 wildfires burn in Greece, Turkey, and Italy, causing hundreds of millions of dollars in damages and forcing the evacuations of thousands from tourist resorts.
You know, this climate change thing is starting to be a problem.
But some good news. Renewable energy was the second biggest source of electricity generation in the U.S. in 2020, surpassing polluting coal and coming in second only to natural gas, according to the U.S. Energy Information Administration. Renewables were responsible for about 21% of all electricity generated in the U.S. in 2020. Natural gas was number one at around 40% of output.
Natural gas, we're coming for you.
Finally, a victory for activists and anything that breathes in Washington state, the Whatcom County Council just voted to permanently prohibit the approval of any new fossil fuel infrastructure and restrict expansion of existing fossil fuel facilities. The move was spearheaded by new council members who in 2013 worked to defeat a polluting coal export facility and then decided to run for office in their own community.
Nice. Elections matter. Way to go, Whatcom County. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find, follow, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, interestingly enough, you got the governor of Arkansas, Asa Hutchinson, a Republican, now regretting signing into law the ban on masks. Evidently, you know, you can't allow the states to implement anything that would make people do things in their interest. But as he said, you know, he now regrets it, regretted signing the law that prevents state and local governments from the mask mandates. And because Arkansas is going through one of the worst surges of the pandemic thus far, it's amazing how that happens. Now, I guess there's talk of going back and mending this somehow. I'm not sure what they're going to do. But at some point, they're going to have to do something, don't you think? Anyway, here to share some thoughts on the top stories of the day, our good friend, former Ohio Congressman and political analyst Bob Ney. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Well, thank you, Rick.
So, are we surprised by this, where you got Hutchinson there in Arkansas, you know, saying, oops, you know, we made a mistake, while you've got DeSantis in Florida going, no, I'm doubling down. Don't Fauci my Florida.
Well, you know, because I know Asa Hutchinson served with him, you know, in Congress, and I think he is probably the type of person that would be much more, adaptable to saying, hey, you know, we should have not done this or we should have done that. Not just because he gets in the political box, but his personality is going to be different than DeSantis. You know, when it comes to DeSantis, will carry this to the end, Rick, you know, no matter what, because he's in this fight. He's going to run in 2024, whereas I think Asa Hutchinson has understood that when he signed that bill, cases were declining in March, and they are not now, and he needs to take a different position on it and, you know, hopefully lead the charge to make some type of amendment to the law they created.
No, even myself, you know, I mentally I was allowing myself to think, okay, mm-hmm. you know, we're gonna get through this. You know, maybe we just, you know, we stay away from each other. We wear the masks when we have to. You know, we're gonna get through this. I'm now starting to look at this and go, do we really have to go through the kind of mask mandates and the kind of things that we just went through, especially given the fact that it's clear that we're just not big boys and girls and don't know how to do things right?
Well, there's going to be some changes because now you're seeing states begin, Massachusetts, California, to say if you're a healthcare worker, you're going to get a vaccination. Now, some people begin to argue with that. If you want to work at the YMCA summer camp, all right, and you're a counselor, guess what? You have to have certain vaccinations. I'm not talking about COVID.
Right.
I'm talking about, you know, other vaccinations you have to have. If you want to attend the camp, you have to have tetanus. I mean, there are certain things that have happened in the past that may not be COVID, but they're requirements. We've had them. And I think you're going to see a whole, you know, mixed match of different things come out. And, you know, with healthcare workers, for example, I would think if I worked in a healthcare facility with the amount of COVID that was in a healthcare facility, I would think I would get a vaccination, right?
Yeah.
But in Ohio, what, only less than 60% got vaccinated at the time? I mean, this is pretty clear cut. You know, we needed to get to 70% by around June, and that's the two shots. We're at 70% with one shot, and we needed to get higher. And now there's a whole confusion or maybe on purpose confusion of information where people say, I heard it today from a friend of mine who said, well, you know, why get vaccinated if you can still get COVID? You know, Lindsey Graham got COVID. Well, the point is he's not on a ventilator.
Yeah, did you not listen to the rest of the things that Lindsey Graham had to say? I very rarely ever listened to Lindsey Graham. But he said, look, I'm not much sicker because of it. Duh.
Right. So there's going to be some differences. There are going to be some arguments, and there's, you know, going to be local decisions or state decisions or whatever. The president came out and said he was for the private sector, you know, requiring vaccinations. I think that the CDC made the biggest screw up when they knew we weren't at 70%, and they said, let's do the honor system. Let's be honest about it. Well, all of a sudden, everybody was 100% vaccinated. Yeah. If you looked around places, I'm noticing more masks today than I've seen in the last, you know, month and a half. Yeah, around different places. Home Depot required all employees today to have masks.
Yeah, my wife said the same thing. You know, she while at the supermarket, you know, this is the same thing.
Right.
That, you know, maybe we're in a moment where we're going to be big boys and girls, and maybe we get through it. Maybe I'm hopeful. Now, what's interesting is, you know, as you said, that, you know, I think there was a mistake as well. I thought it was, but now you're seeing companies coming out and saying that, you know, they're taking it on. I mean, Walmart and others are doing the mask mandates. There are a bunch of this. And it's now deflected to the private sector because the public sector is hobbled. You know, like in Arkansas, they've passed the law. They can't do anything. Other states have done the same thing. So the private sector is going to have to. And I look at this story about Yelp. I don't know if you ever use Yelp when you go out to eat or whatever, but it's one of these kind of, you know, search things that tell you where restaurants are, and then you can get reviews and do all that stuff. They are now putting in their filter whether you need to be vaccinated and whether it's the staff is vaccinated and if they require proof of vaccination, which I think is that's a good thing.
Right. And look, let's look at the alternative. And I think, you know, and I know, unless something happens that we're not aware of, there's not going to be a total lockdown number two.
Nope.
Now, if we want to avoid that lockdown number two, however, then let's make some concessions like vaccinations and masks, and that prevents lockdown number two.
Again, this seems like simple stuff, doesn't it?
It does.
It shouldn't be this difficult. It really shouldn't. And we shouldn't have to go through what I have a listener who, bright guy, PhD, does modeling, and the models that he's telling me by the end of September, we could be up to 300,000 cases a day. Somewhere around 2,300 people dying every day, even with the less deadly, Delta variant. And then down the road is the next, I guess, Lambda's next.
Lambda.
And the concern is that with all of this now stewing, that we get something that jumps the vaccine, and we're right back to where we freaking started from.
Well, exactly, because if the vaccinations had occurred, and of course, we still have another whole subject here we could talk about tonight for an hour, the rest of the world, all right? But if the vaccinations had occurred, you know, as was desired on schedule, then that helps to stop the, as I understand it, you know, the additional strains that will mutate. And I said the rest of the world because there also has to be some kind of focus to get everybody else going. Otherwise, you know, in Africa, in India, Asia, there's going to be all kinds of variants pop up because the, you know, rates of vaccinations are so incredibly low. So, yeah, that's got to be tackled too. But right here on the home front, you know, if the vaccinations had been, you know, more on scale where they were supposed to be, and masks were kept, you know, longer and not on the honor system, I think we'd be having a different discussion here tonight.
Yeah, I just found out that the county I live in is now on the CDC's list of substantial increases in the in COVID, and now I'm going, great, you know, here we go.
Right.
Just nuts. But you know, you had sent me a story earlier that California was going to mandate vaccines for healthcare workers, and my first thought is, you know, this should have been done months ago. This voluntary thing in the most dangerous places is crazy, because as you pointed out, we've mandated vaccines and things before. When kids go to school, they have to have a whole series of them. If you travel out of the country, you have to have a whole series of shots, depending on where you're going. This is not, none of this stuff, as you pointed out, is new. It's just now that we've politicized this thing so much that thought and reason and sanity are completely out the window.
I remember in 1978, traveling overseas, and I can remember the color of my vaccination passport. You know, you used to have the yellow vaccination passports, and you would have marked in there, you know, what shots you had, and you had to have that when you went into certain places. So this isn't, you know, new. The issue, I understand, is new, but you know, the fact of having to have these is not something just created today.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's become a political argument, which it shouldn't be whatsoever. But eventually, I think to get into, if this continues, eventually you will have to have a vaccine passport to get into certain events. And then the question arises, you know, what marks those certain events? Well, public gatherings, concerts, sporting events, if you want to have them, then, you know, they're doing it in other countries. You know, Israel's done it to go out to eat. So, you know, it's around the corner if this doesn't stop.
And it's all because of look, as I say, stupid's not new. We've had stupid for a long time. It's just that it seems to really be, you know, prevalent today. And I blame a lot of things. I blame social media. I blame some politicians that you would have thought in the past wouldn't have been this bad. But, you know, here we are. I want to get your thoughts on this. Evidently, there's now a lawsuit against the Biden administration. A group of lawyers for landlords are suing the administration in federal court over this latest eviction moratorium. You think it goes anywhere?
Well, it has. I'm going to say, unfortunately, it may have some life to it. Now, the group of landlords and, by the way, real estate companies are behind this. They issued that legal challenge, and it's in D.C. District Court. And, you know, the Alabama and Georgia Associations of Realtors had an emergency motion. They argued that the CDC's order, you know, exceeds the CDC's power, which, frankly, probably it does, because I don't know why we had them actually make the mandate anyway.
Yep.
Should have been an executive order in the first place or congressional. We do have a court case, unfortunately, though. I think it was 5-4 decision, if my memory serves me right, that is saying, well, Congress has the power to do this. So if this does happen, and they may have a chance, you know, at the district level, and then there's appeals, it'd probably just be better if Congress just does it, you know. And
yeah, this was my point, and this is, I think, what Cori Bush's point was when she, you know, had her protest on the Capitol steps. Why did the Democrats, break for recess in the House? They should have stayed, got this done, and moved forward.
And look, the president has been very, very out front, honest about this. He said he's doing the moratorium. He's not sure if it's legal. And you know, I think he was very candid about it, and I think that's great. He's trying. Can't criticize him for that. But he's also, I think, sending a warning signal out there that, you know, he's not beating his fist saying, this is it, I'm going to win. He's sending a warning to the Congress that it may not succeed.
Yeah.
But
now
he's temporarily giving it life.
Yeah. Now you said you can't criticize him today. Impeach Biden is trending on Twitter because of this.
For what?
For this? He's overstepped his bounds. He's destroying capitalism, Bob. He's a socialist communist. It's the end of the free market because he's making sure that during a pandemic, people don't get thrown into the streets.
I have watched, you know, Bill Clinton and George Bush while I was in office, and others while I've been doing, you know, media work, I'd do executive orders, and nobody got impeached over them. And some of them were questionable. Some of them weren't. That's absolutely bizarre to say that, you know, it's an impeachable offense to do an executive order.
Well,
that's why we have courts to say if the executive orders are correct or not.
Right. And like you said, he probably thinks it is going to get overturned, but it buys him a little bit of time to keep people in their homes until Congress actually does their freaking job. And this is one of those things where I go, Congress, you got to do your job on a number of fronts, immigration being another part of this. Last question I got for you today, you know, sad day, the passing of AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka. Did you know Rich?
Oh, I knew him well. I was he reached 72. I was in shock that he passed. I knew him very, very well. The United Mine Workers District 6 was in Belmont County, and Trumka, you know, came out of the support of that group and many others. I dealt with him on issue after issue with the United Mine Workers, and then, of course, with the AFL-CIO, but especially United Mine Workers. Yes, I knew Rich Trumka well.
And, any thoughts on him or his passing, his legacy?
Oh, he was a great union leader. Look, you know, especially with the coal mines, it was just so tough, you know, with just different rulings that happened with, you know, coal mine owners that went after the union, and he just fought the absolute good fight, and then he moved to the AFL-CIO, and he's just been a solid union guy. We worked with him, too, on the, you know, steel issues. He's just always been there. The other thing I liked about Rich Trumka, and of course, this is personal bias, but I can remember at times when he got heat, you know, for supporting me, and he's like, too bad. You know, he supported us. We're going to support him. You know, he was just, a very stand-up guy.
Now, that's an important thing, and it's probably the reason I asked you, because he's been painted as someone who only helped the Democrats. In fact, one person said he's the Pied Piper of union money to the Democratic Party. And, you know, for me, it's not so much that as it's there aren't any Republicans left for Labor to support, really.
Yeah, you know, he was very what I would call unbiased. If he did what was, let me put it this way, and this is what I really respect about him, because not everybody is always like this with organizations, you know. But he did what was right to do for the union. If that meant he supported a Republican, he'd support a Republican. He'd take the heat for it. If those Republicans had, you know, supported labor, and he did in many cases, I think, what was right to do for the union. And so sometimes that causes, you know, controversy with somebody. But I thought he was a very, very good labor. I thought he was a great friend to labor.
Sad day, and especially on this day. And there's part of me that goes, you know, maybe this will be a better day because this is the 40th year since the firing of the Patco workers by Ronald Reagan, of which, you know, I've said is the, you know, the shot heard across the boardroom that began open season on unionized workers. Maybe this will change the horrible memories of this day.
And let's hope so.
We will see. But Bob, as always, I appreciate you taking a little time for us. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Rick.
Good stuff. Our good friend Bob Ney. Like anything, I know Bob knows everybody. he's been around a long time. One of the main reasons that he's here as often is he's got contacts and he's been through all of this stuff. But like I said, I hope today will be a day that will be the beginning of the turnaround. 40 years ago today, this was corporate America heard the shot around the boardroom. That was open season on workers and attack on organizing. Maybe today is the day when working people stand up and begin to move forward. And look, it comes back to what we can get pushed through the Senate. So today, in memory of Rich, you know, call your senator. Call them early. Call them often. We want the PRO Act pushed through. Desperately need the PRO Act to be pushed through. If you followed the Amazon organizing campaign and the election that happened a couple of months back and all of the egregious violations and all of the law breaking that happened, there needs to be real penalties. And what we saw in front of us, the fact that they may have to run that election again, that's the penalty? And the question is, who's it the penalty for? Is it a penalty against Amazon, or is it a penalty against the workers in the union? Because the union doesn't have unlimited resources like billionaire Bezos. They don't have unlimited funds to go buy a $500 million bathtub boat or go ride a giant phallic symbol into the sky. They have limited resources. They've got workers' resources. This is why we definitely need, without question, comprehensive labor law reform. And this is the moment. This is the moment. And let, you know, the passing of Rich Trumka be what maybe brings the movement together and focus us in that direction. You know, as I said back on January 20th, the firing of Peter Robb, the general counsel for the NLRB, maybe the shot that turns around the National Labor Relations Board, a guy who was instrumental in ensuring that the workers were fired 40 years ago today. Symbolism matters. And hopefully the narrative forward is we're going to fight, we're going to mourn the dead, but we're going to fight like hell for the living and fight for a better tomorrow. Opportunities, better wages, hours, conditions. A voice in the place where you work. A chance for a better future for your children and their future children. To me, it's that simple. I'd love to hear your thoughts, questions, comments. Rick@thericksmithshow.com. We're taking off the next couple of Fridays. Things that we're working on moving us into the fall. We'll be playing a best of. If you've got any questions, comments, thoughts, we'd love to hear it. You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. But if you missed any of today's program, thericksmithshow.com is where you get the podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Email Rick at rick@therickssmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.